This is episode number 683, Make Your Dreams a Reality.
Welcome to the School of Greatness. My name is Lewis Howes, a former pro athlete turned lifestyle entrepreneur. And each week we bring you an inspiring person or message to help you discover how to unlock your inner greatness. Thanks for spending some time with me today. Now let the class begin.
Tom Bradley said, "The only thing that will stop you from fulfilling your dreams is you." And Martin Luther King Jr. said, "You don't have to see the whole staircase. You just take the first step." Welcome to today's episode. It's all about making your dreams a reality. We've got some powerful people that I want to bring light to. And I know you have big dreams that you've been wanting to accomplish. We all do. I hear this all the time. "Lewis, how do I achieve this in my life? How do I launch this thing? I've got a dream of being this. What are the steps?" And sometimes the hardest part is taking that first step. It's the fear. It's the unknown. It's the anxiety. Well, what if I fail? What if this all goes wrong? And what if people make fun of me? And that's why I wanted to bring you a new interview series with entrepreneur creative masters who shared what they did to make their dreams a reality. And in this episode, you'll hear wisdom from Steve Aoki, the iconic and world-renowned DJ, Lily Singh, one of the most influential people on the internet, Cassie Ho, one of the most influential fitness icons of the decade, and Julius Dean, the magician who has over 20 million fans online from around the world. Get ready for this one because I know it'll inspire you to take the action you need, have the belief in yourself, and take that first step. And again, this is all about how to make your dreams a reality. And without further ado, let's dive into this episode about how to make your dreams a reality.
We've all been there. You have a question about your credit card, you call the number for help and can't get a hold of anyone if you only had a Discover card. With 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. A real person. Get the customer service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
One thing I learned, especially when I was in high school, and I said this before many times, is the hardcore music scene that I got introduced to, that became my life, that became my lifestyle. Every decision that I made was all based on the fundamentals of this hardcore scene. Mm-hmm. Even the food I ate, I became vegetarian because that's what they did. They were talking about animal rights, and I got into that.
Right.
And it was all really based on passion and community. You know, it's like you have to be really into what you're saying and doing and be educated on what you're saying and doing, and learn some instruments and play the music, you know, and play the music of that culture. Essentially, you're an ambassador of the culture. And the way you get respect in that culture is by finishing your projects, whether it's a song, whether it's playing a show, whether it's putting on a show for other bands, so that scene can prosper. And there's an ecosystem.
Yeah.
So it's all about making this ecosystem of that community healthy. And the more you do that, the more that you're able to make it healthy, the more respect you get. So it's not about, I just walked in with like the shoes that no one else has or the bike that everybody wants. The more of that element that you bring to the table, the less cool you are. You're cooler if you actually go, I'm vegetarian, I stopped wearing leather shoes. Oh shit, you made a stance. You made
right.
something that's like a sacrifice. Or I'm putting on a show and all these bands are coming in. Wow, you put on the show, that's awesome. I started a band and I'm playing and I'm representing the sound. Or I made a zine, I interviewed four bands and I went to Kinko's and I made the zine. I'm passing them out to all the different people. it's almost like a religion in a way where you're spreading that goodwill. And it's not about a financial reward as well. It's like there is no financial reward in what I'm talking about here. It's all about believing in a culture and being rewarded by spreading that culture and building that healthy ecosystem of that culture. Mm-hmm. So it's, in essence, that culture doesn't have to be music. That culture could be in a book club or in a chess club or in something that's like drives you. Because, you know, another thing is as well as I talked to some people, they're like, I don't know what my passions are. And I talked to Tom Bilyeu from Inside Quest about like, how do you find your passion? Like what gets you there if you don't know what it is? And you just have to keep trying stuff and see what pulls you, what's pulling you to a certain place. And then meeting up with those people, that community, and finding out ways, because we all are smart. We all have ways and we all have different ways of thinking about how to, you know, get more people involved in what we do.
Right.
The idea of being a pusher is a bad thing, but in this case, it's a good thing. So whenever I could push positive lifestyle and a positive, like, and health and well-being, I feel good about myself.
Yeah.
It's like Christmas when you actually give gifts. Uh-huh. It feels much better than to receive. It's weird because when I think about the times when things weren't happening and I didn't really look at it as sacrifice, you know, I guess in retrospect, it was a sacrifice because you are sacrificing time and you're not, let's say you're not getting paid, but it's not a sacrifice to you. You know,
it's an investment.
Yeah. It's an investment, but you don't even think of it as an investment either. You think about it. This is different. You know, like this, like when I'm going back to the hardcore community, it's like, when we put on shows in our living room, we never took a dime. We spent all this time getting people to know about what we did. And once we got the ball rolling, we were on a roll bringing all these artists in. We never took a dime from any shows. You know, we always had people stay over and I guess you could call it a sacrifice, but it really wasn't. It was a real love for what we were doing.
Mm-hmm. Was that about 10 years ago or when?
No, that was like 15 years ago.
15 years ago. You were throwing these weekly parties in your apartment with a few other guys, right, that you lived with?
Yeah, right. Yeah. You know, we had like about over 400 bands play. But it was some bands that became, you know, bands that everyone knows, like Jimmy Eat World or, you know, like a lot of bands, like a lot of hardcore bands, you know. A lot of the bands that were willing to play in a living room.
How many people could you cram in there?
40 people.
40 people.
Yeah, I mean, but it felt like a lot more, you know.
Right,
the energy was pretty wild.
Electric, yeah.
Yeah. So like for me as well, I'm DJing obviously to a much larger audience, but I find a value in playing in front of five people. I played in front of five people many times.
Yeah.
It's a band.
Yeah.
You know, like it's because like sometimes we would do tour and we would play in houses, basements, a warehouse that was abandoned, you know, with a generator.
What was the biggest thing you learned about yourself playing in front of those 5, 10, 20 people rooms for years, I'm assuming, before anything ever picked up? What's the biggest lesson you learned about going through that process and that journey?
It's connection. It's like having a real connection with people and looking at them in the eye and actually communicating. After the shows, we'd hang out with them. Like those five people that came to the show, I'd want to know them. Be like, you came, you spent money, you drove all the way to my show. There's only four of you, five of you here, 10 of you here. Let's hang out. Let's do something. Let's I want to know about you and like what your scene's about. And then building a network and actually like treating them as peers, not as fans so much as peers, because I am a fan as well as them. I was those people when I was a teenager, and I'm still those people at other shows. I'm in the crowd and if I really am attracted to a message or a sound, I'm always a fan. That's another thing I've learned is that you can't forget about the fact that the reason why I do it is because I am a fan. We're all at the same level. That 15-year-old kid that's like up front screaming or like bawling their eyes out or like that energy, I'm like looking at him like, I'm you. I was you. I still am you.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm so happy that they don't give a fuck about anybody else and what they're thinking. Cause I was that kid in the front, like screaming, wanting to sing along and be connected to the bands. And when the bands and artists connected with me, it changed my life, you know? Mm. So I always wanted to be that. And then remember like, hey, we are emotional beings and we're here to express this connection.
I don't want to fill anyone's void. I think Humble and I learned this when we were in Italy. We had the honor of talking to Pharrell, and he said something that really, really impacted me. When Humble was asking him, Humble said something like, I want to fill the Andre 3000 void. You know, that's what I want my music to be. And Pharrell was like, you should fill the Humble the Poet void.
Ooh.
And I was like, ooh. And me and Humble talk about that all the time. And that got me thinking where I don't want people to be like, oh yeah, you could be the next Mindy Kaling. You know, they're just saying that because I'm also a brown girl. I don't want people to be like, yeah, you could be Amy. No, I want to fill the Lily Singh void. I want to be the best version of myself that gives me goosebumps. I want to make little Lily get goosebumps when she looks at my success. That's how I want to be.
I love the dedication that you had. I'm just going to read it.
Yeah.
Dedicated to the person I was 6 years ago. Mm-hmm. I told you to keep going. Thanks for listening.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of reminds me of the Matthew McConaughey speech.
Oh, yeah?
Did you remember seeing his speech? Was the Oscar or the Oscar where he was like, my inspiration is myself 3 years from now, and like chasing that guy mm-hmm. who's going to achieve those things that I want to achieve. And it's like, what do I need to do now that's going to make that happen? Mm-hmm. And like always chasing that myself, not someone else.
Right.
So I think it's cool that you kind of dedicated to that.
Yeah, I was thinking long and hard about the dedication. I'm like, of course, I want to dedicate to my mom. Of course, it's all these people. I put them all in the acknowledgements. I'm like, cut the BS.
Mm.
The person that's actually dedicated to, that actually got me here, the person that was like, I feel like crap. I'm still going to get up tomorrow. When I was in my last year of university, I discovered YouTube, which did not exist when I was younger. And I remember watching these videos thinking, there's people in their rooms making videos and people are watching them. Like, what is happening here? And there was a few creators in my community that, you know, had a few videos, and I didn't really think anything of it. I thought it was just them. Yeah. Then when I went more into YouTube, I saw, no, people all over the world are making these videos, and this is a thing. And I spontaneously one day put up a video online. I thought nothing of it. It was not even comedy. It was so far from who I am today. Mm-hmm. It was actually a spoken word piece about religion.
Yeah, I heard you took it down, right?
I took it down not because it sucked, because I have many sucky videos up.
Yeah.
I took it down because it just does not represent who I am anymore. Mm-hmm. But it was so awkward. I was so uncomfortable in it. And as bad as it was, I just fell in love with the fact that I could write whatever I wanted, say whatever I wanted, edit it however I want, promote it however I want. And no person around me impacted that success. There was no one else I had to rely on. I learned how to do everything myself, and that I fell in love with. And so without thinking, I posted a second video that was comedy. It was based on linguistics argument I had with my friend. And I posted another one. And then suddenly I found myself thinking, well, how can I get better? How can I learn how to edit more? How can I write better? Just like the fruit bowl. Just like the fruit bowl. And then it snowballed into this brand and career.
The quote about the universe might respect the law of attraction, but it respects a good hustle even more.
Mm-hmm.
I really love that. Was there a point earlier when you weren't a hustler, or was it even when you were five, you were like always hustling? And then how do you sustain the hustle for people that feel like, man, that just seems exhausting?
Is there a point in my life where I was not a hustler? Yeah, it was that point of my life at the end of university when I was super sad.
Yeah.
That if anyone had met me during that time, they would not recognize me as who I am today. I literally got up at 3, I mean, I still wake up at 3 p.m. sometimes if I go to sleep really late. I'm just going to be honest. My sleep schedule is a hot mess.
Right.
But I had absolutely no goals.
Mm.
I woke up with no purpose. Literally Walker from The Walking Dead. Did not care. Didn't care to accomplish anything. I didn't care at all about how the fruit bowl looked.
Right,
you know what
right,
I mean?
Right.
I was a different person. But prior to that, I do got to say, everything in my life when I look back, it's been this need to do my best. And the greatest example is, I remember I used to work at Harvey's, which is a Canadian fast. I think your equivalent might be Hardee's.
Yes.
Here in America. I worked at, it was my first job, a fast food restaurant. And I remember there was downtime and the store was empty. And so I was like, okay, great. I'm going to refill the cutlery. And I was doing stuff. And it did not occur to me that everyone else was just chilling. They were just like looking at me, fill these forks. And I remember hearing someone say this, and it was the most shocking thing I've ever heard. They were just like, you just always got to do something. Like, you're always working. And I'm like, wait, are you guys not? And it was so shocking, but I didn't even realize that was a thing people did. Like,
right.
They just did not do something. And so I really think it's just something embedded within me that I haven't completely figured out why.
Mm.
It's just always been this need to do things and be productive.
Well, I mean, you look at the results. I mean, the results don't lie. You've generated certain results.
Nor do hips.
They do not.
You're right.
Do your hips lie?
Not at all.
Oh, all right.
Never.
Show me later.
Okay.
Like, do a little dance move. I mean, my results don't lie. And you've created specific results in your life because of this level of hustle and energy mm-hmm. that's been consistent. And I think if people don't want to generate great results, then they can take a break and they mm-hmm. can pause and, you know, not be productive in certain things consistently. Right. And they're going to get those type of results. So it all depends on what we want.
It all depends on what we want. And I think not the danger, but something I know people think after hearing this conversation is they think, well, that's very unhealthy. That's an unhealthy lifestyle balance. And people say that to me all the time. A lot of my friends are, you're always working. Just come out with us. And here's the thing. If I'm really honest, to have a certain level of success, I do believe you do have to be obsessed with it.
You have to be.
You know, you have to be obsessed with it.
You cannot win a championship at any sport at the highest level without being obsessed with
it. So it depends what your goals are.
Depends what it is.
If your goal is to be successful, but then also have weekends and also have a certain standard of relationship and have family, that's not wrong. That is your goal and you do that. Mm-hmm. But when people say that to me, my goals are I want to be exceptionally good at this one thing.
Yeah.
And that is going to require a certain level of dedication.
Certain
and that is the reality of the situation.
Yeah. Obsessiveness.
Right? Obsessiveness.
All of your time
and
involved.
Dwayne's a great example. Like obsessiveness, waking up at 4, working out no matter where he is. Like that is an obsessive level of commitment.
And he gets incredible results.
Exactly.
When I was in middle school, well, actually, one thing you need to know about me is that I can't eat chocolate. Not that I don't want to.
You physically can't.
I really actually want to eat chocolate. I just can't. I'm what you call a super taster. So for me, arugula, chocolate, coffee, all that kind of stuff tastes extremely bitter to me. So I can't eat it.
What about milk chocolate?
Can't.
White chocolate.
No, white chocolate's not chocolate.
I love white chocolate. Oh my gosh.
That is a trick question. So what I would do, my sister and I would go trick-or-treating and we'd take all the candies together and then I would create chocolate creations out of them. Then I would bring them to my friends at school and they liked it. So I was like, well, if you like it, then you're probably going to buy it. So then I started packaging them, charging them 25 cents for 3 little balls. And then they went crazy for it. So then I started making value packs and adding cookies and Rocky Road bars and stuff. And I had my first business partner in middle school. In high school, all the other middle schools had heard about it, apparently.
Really?
And so everyone was like, oh, you're Cassie, the cookie girl, right? And I was like, yep, that's me. And then so I carried this huge bag with me to school every single day. And then some kids were so addicted. I mean, obviously with sugar,
of course.
That they were like, Cassie, please let me sell for you. So
no
I had
way.
5 student employees under me selling. So we like had this massive thing going across campus.
Wow. And it was, you're like a drug dealer.
Yeah, exactly.
Cookie and drug dealer.
Imagine being in Spanish class and people like underneath the table, like going like this.
Wow.
Like, that's how it was. Passing through like 15 hands getting to
were
the
they
next
that
person.
Good?
Oh, yeah. Buttercream cookies sandwiches in M&M flavor, chocolate chip, anything, sugar, snickerdoodle.
Do you still make them?
I don't.
I need some of those right now.
You know, we should do that. We should totally do that. So the crazy thing is that it got so big that the school had to shut me down. I got in trouble.
No way.
Oh, yeah, for sure. But that story got me the full ride scholarship to college. So it ended up paying off. So yeah.
A full ride scholarship.
Uh-huh, full ride scholarship. Yeah.
Living the dream.
Well,
now your parents were happy with that then.
They were happy with that, but they can always find something wrong with
that. Of course, right? They're always judging you. Is it cool that your childhood dream was to be in fashion, right? Mm-hmm. Fashion designer.
Yeah.
And now you have a fitness fashion line, isn't that right?
That is so cool.
So do you feel like you're fulfilling this childhood dream? And
I do. And it's truly amazing because my dad, when I told him I wanted to be a fashion designer, I think I probably was in middle school or something.
Yeah.
And I had binders and binders full of evening gown designs and sketches and stuff. He told me literally to my face, you will not succeed. You'll make no money and you'll have no friends. That's actually in my book. I wrote that. And I will never let him go for it. And I want everyone to know because that could have broke me right there.
Sure.
And I did cry and it did break me, but it didn't break me for the rest of my life. But I remember it because I know how I can take that and turn it into something much better. So I proved to my parents and to myself that you can follow your passion and do something you're happy with. Because for them, I mean, I understand they really wanted me to be financially stable and all that kind of stuff. And I'm first generation Asian American. So they're coming from, you know, Vietnam and, you know, that deal with the war and all that kind of stuff. So I understand, but I don't understand imposing your dreams upon mine and not letting me at least try.
Sure.
Because this vibrance inside of me, this like desire to just make it. I don't think they ever understood how hard and how far we go to actually make it happen.
Right, right. Yeah. Now, so would you say you've achieved your childhood dream then?
I would say yes. But I think I'm also working on it every day to make it even bigger.
And what would you say is your adulthood dream?
My adulthood dream?
Yeah.
I would love to see the clothing line in stores, I think, and we're working on that. And my other dream is to make sure that Pop Pilates is a huge group fitness format across the world. And we have a great start this year. We're trying to certify 2,000 trainers by 2015, 4,000 by spring 2016, and that will really bring us to the next level. I mean, everyone would do Pop Pilates at 24 Fitness. It's so cool.
Oh my goodness. Now, how are you finding these trainers, or how did you create this training for them?
I'm working with NAFC as my certifying body. And so together, we've created the manual and everything to make that happen. But my current core team of master trainers are beyond incredible. And, you know, it's interesting. It's not that they weren't fans of Blogilates to begin with. Some of them, maybe like a few, but a lot of them were already really seasoned group fitness instructors. They've been teaching Zumba and Pio and all these things for years. So to impress them, you know, that takes something as well. And I wasn't sure, and you're never sure what people think. And so this group of core, like 15 people have come together. And let me tell you, at the summit, it was magic. And I can only use that word because there was something swirling in the air that wasn't just learning the format, learning the choreography and that kind of stuff. It was just this passion to bring this format to people to help them change their lives and have a really fun time doing it.
One of my favorite parts about my job is that I get the opportunity to travel a lot. And in fact, I'm recording this right now while I'm in Mexico. And actually, I was thinking about something that I wanted to share because I get a lot of questions from so many people about different side hustle ideas. So here's one for those of you out there that are on the go a lot like I am, or traveling a lot. When you're staying in your Airbnb on your trips, have you ever thought about how you could be making extra money by hosting through Airbnb while your home is vacant? If you're interested in an extra stream of income, Airbnb hosting is an easy place to start, and it's like giving your home some company while you're away. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. So listen, we all know life is full of yada yada, like those quote unquote free trials that somehow still charge your card for something, or when companies have those sneaky gotchas hiding deep in the fine print. And I know you've dealt with yada yada before, like those bills that keep going up and up for no reason at all, or when budget airlines promise a cheap fare but then charge you for every little thing until you realize you're paying more than you would have somewhere else. And yes, it is possible to outsmart yada yada, like triple checking airline deals to make sure all you need is already included, but you don't take yada yada in life, so don't take yada yada from your wireless provider. Metro by T-Mobile has no contracts, no credit checks, no surprises, and nada yada yada. Stop by one of over 6,000 Metro stores nationwide.
Well, the first video went viral was not even magic. It was like a snake prank. And I just took a fake snake and I put it on people in London on South Bank, and I made a little compilation of it, posted it online, and it just started getting hundreds of thousands of shares. And I think the video is now on 50 million Facebook views.
Wow. When was this, a year ago?
This was about a year ago, year and a bit ago.
So it wasn't even a magic trick video.
Right, yeah.
It's a prank video.
Yeah, yeah.
And then when did you try to do the magic style of a viral video?
So the magic style was, well, I'd basically been incorporating magic the whole way. So bits and pieces of magic, kind of more prank, sketch orientated videos. And then my first viral magic video was called The Invisible Chair Illusion, right? And I basically...
It's where you sit down and one leg or whatever.
Right, exactly. And then I can lean back. It's like The Matrix.
I always wonder how that trick happens.
Aha, keep wondering, my friend.
Yeah, I've always wondered that. I don't know if I saw... I think I saw a video of someone else doing this. I don't know if it was with you.
Yeah, it's actually funny.
They just sit down and they're like reading a paper and you're like...
That's exactly what I did, yeah.
You did that trick.
Yeah, I did that trick, and then it trended. I think it got like 500,000 views on YouTube, and then it's like 20, 30 million views on Facebook.
Just doing it in different locations and getting reactions to the crowd, or the people walking by.
Exactly.
Homeless people, like, well, you know, whatever.
Exactly.
Interesting. So that was about a year ago as well?
Yeah, about a year. Roughly.
Right afterwards, the snake trick?
Yeah, I just started. I was a production machine. When I started the social media game, I was a production machine. Like I would go. I was third year of university. I'm 23 now. I was 22 back then, or you know, maybe just turning 22. So it was about a year and a half. Yeah, and I was, you know, intent on building my social media profile. So I didn't have a lot of money in the bank, but I would hire like videographers on Craigslist or Gumtree for like $50 to $100. They'd come out with me for the day. We'd come up with a concept. We'd go out, film it all day, have a laugh. And then I would take the concept, the footage, go home, edit it up. Mm-hmm. And I would post it online the same day. It was in the drive I had back then. And I was making 3-4 videos a week. So I was really a production machine. I was production, editing, you know, protagonist and the actor in the video. Mm-hmm. So yeah. So,
creating the storyline, creating everything.
Exactly. And then I had the situation with one of my videos just pop. And the thing about social media is once one thing goes viral, your audience will just come. It's crazy.
So the first videos weren't going as viral, maybe it sounds like, until how long were you doing these 3-4 videos a week until one popped?
Yeah, I was probably about six, seven months.
Really?
6-7 months of nothingness.
What's nothingness? Yeah. A couple thousand views? Yeah, a couple of thousand or 10,000 views, maybe. Yeah, exactly. Is this on Facebook or YouTube or both?
This is on both, basically.
So a couple thousand views.
Well, actually, I'll tell you. It was, a couple of thousand views. Now, should I tell you about my strategy in terms of how I blew up?
Yeah. But so, first off, I mean, yes, I want to hear that.
All right.
So you did the snake video first, which got how many views?
About 30, 40 million.
Yeah. And then after that, you started doing 3-4 videos a week for months.
I was doing 3-4 videos. Actually, I'll tell you that it wasn't the snake video that went viral first. It was a prank video with a girl. That was the first video that popped. But it was basically the same time as the snake video. They were within about 2-3 days of each other.
Yeah.
The first video that went absolutely bonkers was like a prank war I did with this girl who was like my girlfriend at the time. And then I posted that video online and that's what popped.
Got it. And this was after 6 months of you doing videos that weren't doing anything.
They were doing a little bit, bits and pieces. Yeah, yeah. I was getting some traction, but I had about 10,000 likes.
Yeah, you know, that's it.
Throughout, yeah. It was a grind.
For 6 months, trying, working every single day, 10,000 fans.
Yeah, yeah.
10,000 to 50,000 views, maybe a video max.
Right. Exactly.
What kept you like continuing to do this when you weren't making any money? Your audience wasn't growing. You weren't seeing the views grow.
Yeah.
Why'd you keep doing this grind? Yeah. You know, 10, 12 hours a day.
Yeah, well, it's the social media, building a following is priceless. You can't buy a social media following. So I saw the value in that. I still do. And the fact I was getting some positive comments, I think
drove you enough.
Yeah.
I mean, you were in college. You didn't have too many responsibilities. Yeah. So like,
there was a level of boredom.
Right.
There was absolutely. I was at university.
Yeah.
I don't know how it is in America, but in the UK, you sometimes get 6, 7, 8 hours a week of lecture time.
Yeah,
right.
Bored.
Right, my degree was relatively easy. I had a lot of free time. Well, I had some options. I could either go to the societies or the clubs, and I was like, right, I really want to build the social media. I'm doing some magic gigs. I understand the kind of the magic world, and I understand, you know. Also, I spent a year in UCLA. So I met a lot of the kind of Vine community.
Yes, yes.
So I was, when I got back to the UK from my year abroad, I was intent on building what they'd already done. It's crazy, these people in LA,
machines.
They built, you know, fantastic incomes and fantastic careers off their hard work in their childhood and their young adulthood. Yeah. So when I got back to London, I was like, right, I really should have been making videos. So yeah, I just did it, and I was driven, and I think it was a mixture of free time.
Boredom,
bit of boredom, okay, and also good fitness. I think if you know when you're going to the gym every day and you're eating super healthy, you just, your mind is in a different
clear. You have ideas running all the time, and you want to go create
exactly.
And you wanted to build something, but it still took you some time to kind of figure it out. This 6 month window of time where you weren't really doing much, but it was kind of like your testing ground. You were seeing what worked, what didn't work,
right.
Then you figured out the model. It sounds like you did a couple of videos that went viral. And is that when you were like, okay, now I see all the elements that need to be in one video for it to have the potential to get some traction? Right. Is that what you kind of recognize? Aha moment? Or?
Yeah. So let me give you the rundown. Right. So I had no followers, no likes. Step one, get my friends and family to like my page. Right. Mm-hmm. Message everyone, hey, can you like my page?
Beg them, please. Yeah, exactly. I don't have anything cool, but do it anyways.
Yeah. And it's funny because I sent everyone that question, the same, copied and pasted.
I've hey, done can you like my page, too, man.
Exactly, and it's funny because these people hit me up like a year and a half later, and they're like, "Oh, hey, like I'm doing a fundraiser," and I just see like the previous thing is me asking them a question.
Yeah,
you know, it's interesting that. Yeah. But that was step one, and then so step two, which was going to take me from about 1,000 likes to 7,000 likes overnight, was what I would do is I was thinking, how can I make my videos get some traction? Okay, so on YouTube, it was about Reddit. Reddit, trying to get on the front page of Reddit, yes. just trying to get, I mean, I'd have like fake proxy accounts doing upvotes and stuff, which is how some of my videos got like a million views. But more Facebook orientated, what I would do is I would reach out to pages that have followings, right? And there are so many pages on Facebook with, you know, 200,000 likes, 400,000 likes, etc., as there are YouTube channels with 200,000 subscribers, etc. So I would basically message hundreds of them and say, hey, got a great video, can you share my video? And the way I would find these pages is I would go onto another viral page. So for example, like, you know, whatever, go onto Tiger's page, and then I would click on all the shares. So say it's got 100,000 shares on a video. I would just choose one person, right, who and their public profiles, because they appear in the shares, and then I would just go on that profile and just scroll through their newsfeed, this random person somewhere in the world, and just see what stuff they'd shared, and it's usually from pages. So then I would just find loads of random pages from around the world through finding these random people from these, you know, public celebrities or viral pages, and I would send them the message, hey, I'm, you know, got a great video, can you share that video, right? And I sent so many messages I ended up getting blocked for a day. What happened is after sending a couple of hundred messages, I eventually got a response.
Yeah, you got 10, 20 different pages that are like, sure, I'll share it out.
Yeah,
it's interesting,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, well, it wasn't 10, 20 pages, but there were a few.
Okay.
Some asked for money.
Yeah.
Some did it from the kindness of their heart, or, you know, whatever reason. I'm not sure why they did it. But I got a page called Mayor Boss. Right? He had 5 million followers.
Right? Mayor?
Mayor, M-A-Y-O-R space B-O-S-S.
Mayor Boss.
So he's going to get an influx of messages now. And okay. for some reason, on 1,000 likes, you know, I got a message from him a month later, and he said, yeah, bro, got you. And I'm like, what? And then I look at my pages, and I'm refreshing, and they're just bombing up the likes on my page.
Because he shared
shared one of my videos. It got reshared. And when something gets reshared on Facebook, the traffic will just come back in, because your video will appear on the newsfeed with the like button next to it, right? So I went from 1,000 to 7,000 likes overnight. And that was really what gave me the momentum.
You're
I was like,
oh, when people share my videos, then it's
exactly
help grow it faster.
Exactly. And I thought I'd made it. I was like, mom,
7,000
likes. University.
Peace
That's
out.
It. See you later, guys.
There you have it, my friends. We do things differently here. We're all about bringing people together, elevating humanity, and raising the level of consciousness so that we can all be more and feel more fulfilled along the process and the journey. This is episode number 683, lewishouse.com/683 for the full show notes. And you can check out the full interviews of Steve Aoki, Lily Singh, Cassie Ho, and Julius Dean as well. Back there, we have all those links, so check that out. Guys, I'm so excited for what's to come. This is a beautiful time of the year. It's a time to complete. It's a time to finish strong. And I'm so excited about what everyone is working on. We have a community called the Inner Circle, where thousands of people from around the world are a part of, and they're sharing their wins every single week. It's a beautiful thing to see. We're going to be seeing a lot of you in person at the Summit of Greatness here soon, October 4th through 6th. And there's going to be a time for celebration, a time for connection, a time for joy and fun. So many positive things are happening. And my talk show, Inspiring Life, is happening right now. Every single Monday, it comes out for a few more weeks. So check it out on Facebook. Watch Inspiring Life when you go there. Let me know what you guys think. Tag me every time you're on social media listening to this. I want to hear who's listening to it, who's watching the videos, who's connecting to the community, so I can see and learn more about you. I love you so very much. And you know what time it is. It's time to go out there and do something great.
Around, you can find cars like these on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. Auto Trader.